Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm back in a wet London after a week in Toronto with the kids. Now on today's pod, it's a two-parter, which features an interview from Ishmael Bayer. Now the audio quality is not great, but I thought it was absolutely essential to include it because it deals with the powerful healing quality of music and its lyrics and demonstrates the power and the appeal of one Robert Nesta Marley.
Cheer on the athletes on the Olympic big screen. Walk through the 12 cultural exhibitions. Eat all day at the food festival. Sit in the real Jamaican garden. Use the kids zone and creche. Dance, concert and socials. Look out for red tag evening events. Stratford London comes alive July 27 to August 12. Visit festivaljamaica2012.com.
This is the story of how one small island conquered the world.
Jamaican patois.
And a fair start, Asafa Powell. Usain Bolt is also out well. Here they come down the track. Usain Bolt!
It's a story of music, sport, and style. How its rhythms, athletes, and language went global.
Pull up, pull up!
This is how Jamaica conquered the world.
Set it! Set it!
My name is Paul Kelly, and I'm the operations manager at the Bob Marley Museum, which is at 56 Hope Road in Kingston, Jamaica. Bob Marley was born in 1945. He was born in a place named Nine Miles, Jamaica. He grew there till between the ages of 9 and 12 years old. His mother is Sidella Malcolm, and his father was like an overseer, an Englishman named Narval Marley, a white English. He was much older than her. His cousins and uncles were farmers, so he used to do a lot of planting. He used to have a donkey that he used to ride, because 9 Mile Center is a rural district, where them call it Jamaica country. When he moved permanently to Kingston, in a place called Trenchtown. He was living on 2nd Street in Trenchtown. His mother, Miss Booker, by that time she was involved with a man named Mr. Todd, who was Bonnie Whaler's, Bonnie Livingston's father. He and Bonnie Livingston were living in Bonnie Whaler's, that is, they were living in the same house. During those times, a lot of American music was very popular in Jamaica. Just naturally, Bob just loved music. He had a lot of musicians there who used to rehearse in the yard down there. Being around other musicians, so he started to rehearse, he started to play music, he started to sing music, he started to write his own music. Desmond Decker, who was a big musician at that time, who came to a studio to record his first music that when he was around 15 years old. You know, then he got involved with Bonnie Whaler's dad, who also used to love music, because they grew like brothers. And then Peter Tosh used to live further up the road. He was a musician, he could play the guitar, so he started to group up with them to the former group named the Whalers. They had the first hit song, a song named Simmer Down. From that, they just had hit after hit, but they were only popular in Jamaica during those times. The Madonna 64, and they had One Love. First time they did was around 65. Rude Boy, I'm Still Waiting, I'm Gonna Put It On. I know that song, that was a hit in Jamaica, so that was around 65. I'm Gonna Put It On, and they had one that song named Cry To Me. Those were some hits back in those days. Well, the Richard now, Bob and Bonnie and Peter, they used to sing with a recording company next to Studio One. They used to walk from where they lived down at First Street and walk it to Cox's studio. They had to pass where Rita lived in order to get there. So she used to see them and she used to love singing. So they used to communicate about songs and singing, and you know, by walking past her house daily, they got to know each other. So by relationship just developed naturally after that. Well, during the early 60s, Rasta is an inborn thing. So he was Rasta, but he didn't start to express it. It was in the late 60s that he started to live and preach Rastafari philosophy. And it's in the 70s now he started to sing most of the songs of Rastafari. Because Trenchtown was an era that had a lot of Rastafari. And so Bob Marley was exposed to a lot of that. The group went on to around 1974. Around 1971, after they got involved with Chris Blackwell from Island Records, they started to adapt, and the Rastafari faith is a spiritual faith that they don't really seek a lot of material, but they seek the love of Jah, spiritual living. So some of the members of the Wailers didn't want to tour too much, or they didn't like the places that they were touring in, clubs, and it started to cause a split in the group. And some of them, Bonnie and Peter and Juno, they kind of drifted from Bob in that year.
Hunted the philosophy which old one race superior and another inferior.
Why was Chris Blackwell important to Bob Marley? He had a recording company, Island Records, and he gave Bob Marley the money to promote the album Catch a Fire with the Wailers. And even after the Wailers left, he used to promote and produce and find shows for him. So he promoted him and made him recognizable to the world. But I don't think he was really responsible for Bob Marley's sound, because Bob Marley was an established musician long before he met Chris Blackwell. Bob Marley was singing for maybe 10, 11 or 12 years, producing his songs before he met Chris Blackwell. So he was responsible for making Bob Marley to the international stage. That is what I would say would be his claim to fame in the Bob Marley story. When they started to deal with Chris Blackwell first, they had an album named Catch a Fire with Bonnie and Peter and all of them on it. That is when they started to get international fame. And Bob then started to sing with the iTunes. That is when it really took off as a huge international act. That is when the world began to know Bob Marley and the Wailers. During the 70s, Jamaica was going through stages in a young nation, but politicians were in a struggle for rulership, caused factions in Jamaica to be fighting against each other. You had to take sides. And they went into the inner city in order to get their thugs and their enforcers to carry out what you'd call their dirty works for them, and cause warring factions to be killing each other. And Bob Marley was against it. Eventually, because of Bob, and so they had warring factions and a peace, a truce, they decided that they had enough of this political killing and they wanted to keep a concert to establish the peace. And they invited Bob Marley was to be to headline the concert. And while at that peace concert, he invited up the politicians, the head of the government, I think he was Michael Manley at the time, and the leader of the opposition, Edward Seaga. So he called them up on stage as a symbolic gesture to shake hands and show the people that the war is over and now peace they're dealing with. At the height of his career when he got killed, that's the will of the universe, that's how it was supposed to be. We might not like it, but that's how it was, you know. But he was working hard, very hard, and we don't know how the illness came about really, but he got killed by around October of 1980. By May of 1981, he was gone, you know. That's how it is. Why Bob Marley is so powerful now, 30 odd years after? That is unexplainable in certain ways, but I will try and give you my impression of why I think. It's because of the lyrics that he wrote. They were so true and relevant. The truth knows no boundaries. Truth is eternal. People of all generations will be able to identify with it. So the musician meets all manner of people worldwide, to the four corners of the earth. Countries that you never heard about. Bob Marley's powerful. His redemption songs free the people. That is what keeps it living and going on and on and on. He was also a spiritual person, a Rastaman. The Almighty Creator sent him and used him as a voice, as an instrument, as a trumpet to sing and tell the people, make them understand themselves and know themselves. Because he was a divine being. He was more than just an ordinary person. That is why he and his music and his philosophy lives on and on and on. That is why he's so powerful. He was the one who made Jamaicans know that they could achieve these great levels. Because before that, there wasn't much Jamaicans doing anything internationally. We had international stars like our athletes, but when Bob Marley really took the music to a level, it inspired a lot of Jamaicans. Big, big, big figure in Jamaica. Big inspiration to the Jamaican people. They didn't feel inferior again. Bob Marley lifted the people in mind and made them know that the level that Bob Marley reached, and because he reached that level and he keep humble and keep himself calm, he never acted like he was better than anyone. And even until now, that is where the revolution really started, with the Jamaican people's conquest of the world. Bob Marley lifted and started the revolution.
My name is Ishmael Bea. I am from Sierra Leone originally. I'm a writer and a UN advocate for children in armed conflict, currently in Central African Republic. Sierra Leone is a small country in West Africa. It's a country that also most people know about it because we had a civil war for a little over 10 years, beginning in the early 1990s. I grew up in the south of the country in a very small village, really a small town. And my father worked for a mining company that was there. And I was fortunate enough, you know, even though my family is poor, to go to school. The second born in a family of three. And with all of this strong community and simple life and going to the river to swim, playing football, listening to various kinds of music, all of these things changed when the war started in 1991. And I was somewhat conscripted to fight, forcefully to fight in the war as a soldier when I was 13 years old. Well, the life as a child soldier was very difficult. Well, first of all, recruitment was difficult because it was not by choice. You either fought or you were killed, because the war started because of political corruption, but the war had then caused people like me to lose my entire family. So for me, it was to revenge the death of my family. So that became a reason why I stayed in the fighting, but also because I couldn't leave, and then at some point, this became my new family. So the life of my life at the time was just pretty much fighting violence every day in my life. It was just spent cleaning weapons and getting ready to do more fighting. And this is what I came to know, for nearly 2 years. What made me get out of the army was that I didn't really do it on my own. What had happened in Sierra Leone was that there was such a rampant use of children everywhere, various sides of the fight. So various UN organizations, UNICEF included, went into the country and started setting up rehabilitation centers and going to create contact with some of the commanders and then to talk to them, to negotiate with them to remove some of these young people from fighting. So I was one of those people who was disarmed very early on. I actually didn't want to go. I was very upset because I didn't have anything to go to. Well, my rehabilitation, it was very long. And it was a difficult one. But one of the things that helped me along the way was to find a way to reconnect to when things had been civil and good in my country. And one of those ways was through music. And since I grew up with a lot of Jamaican influence through Bob Marley cassette tapes that were bought for me with a Walkman, and so I would listen. And my favorite one became Three Little Birds, because in the song I found this promise. I should wake up every day, even though things were difficult, if something would happen the next day. You know, and then I listened to various things. Running Away became another one, you know, Dupi Conqueror, and a bunch of other things. Hurting Inside became one that I listened to more when I was really down a little bit. So I was just listening to a lot of different things. And whenever I did, it connected me to a time period when things were peaceful, when I was just a little boy with a lot of Rastaman around, you know, and just, you know, Bob Marley music blaring from big speakers all the time in my community. So this was very good for me. I was at the rehabilitation center for about 8 months. When I left that center, things much started to change slowly, and I started living in normal Syrian society in the capital city, Freetown. I did not really know what my life would turn out to be. You know, I started school a little bit. I couldn't really focus very much. But eventually, I had an opportunity to go to the United States to speak at the United Nations about my experience. And it was there that I met a woman who later adopted me in the United States. And while I was there, I went to school again. I went to university and all of it. And then I decided to write a book about my experiences, because I really wanted people to understand how a child goes through a war, but then how they recover and how it is possible, even though it's difficult and it's a very long-term process. So when this book came out, it became very big, more than I had expected. And I think because of that, I gained whatever fame it is that I gained now. And my work that I'd already been doing with the United Nations just became even more stronger in that area. So, and I've always loved writing, so I continue writing. In short, this is how my life changed around. I've never imagined that this was possible. But reggae music has always been very strong. And kind of my connection to that world that was peaceful was through Bob Marley.
Today's show was an epic by our standards, but I hope you enjoyed it all the same. The audio at the end was Ajax football fans singing at halftime in Manchester of this year at Old Trafford against Manchester United. If one piece of audio can sum up what I'm trying to demonstrate with this project, it's this bit of chanting, which demonstrates the global appeal of Jamaican culture. Dutch football fans in England singing in Manchester on a wet March night, a song created some 40 plus years ago by a Jamaican.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.